be blue, 'cause I can't see you. Richie, I love you.
Welcome to episode 89 of the Vintage Annals Archive Outsiders and Visionaries podcast. We kind of added that recently because it really just spoke more about what the page and the episodes were about and how they define. Outsiders works for some things, but not everything. And I just thought the other piece is a little more fitting. Although now our podcast name is very long. Anyway, I'm really excited today. I speak with Michael Weinstein, a photographer, really nice guy. He spent a bunch of years, I think around 78, shooting rock and roll photos, and they're really amazing. It's not easy to, as a photographer, I've done a lot of bands and stuff, and it's, you know, it's not easy even with digital and flash to get great stuff. You're generally, when I shoot music, I might get like 3 out of 50 that are even useful, you know, even usable. But he, whatever he's doing, he has an art. He's an artist with a camera, and he gets these amazing images while they're moving. Again, and he was shooting on film, you know, 36 pictures at a time. And anyway, I'm just going to talk. Going to give you the first part of his bio, and then let you enjoy this. Michael Weinstein's career began in 1978 after graduating from the University of Michigan with an English degree. During that time, Michael worked as a printer in the Ross Ellert Photo Lab, one of Chicago's most well-known, in the black and white film department. Simultaneously, the music scene in Chicago was bursting at the seams. New and exciting acts, including rock and roll, blues, and punk, as well as some more established musicians, were playing in a wider assortment of venues. It was an extremely exciting time and a rare opportunity to be documenting all of these musical acts that were in Chicago. So again, please, there's more to that, but I'll put it in the information in this episode. Enjoy. Thank you. What is your background in Judaism? How did you grow up? Like, did you go to synagogue? What was your family's?
Yeah, I mean, a very, very reform.
Okay.
I grew up very reform. And basically, when I was really young, I would go to these schools that would have temple on Sunday, grade schools or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when we moved into the city, when I was 10, from the burbs, the synagogue that we belonged to, I would go every Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah. But it was like, it was kind of a joke. Nobody took it seriously.
Yeah.
It wasn't like I learned Hebrew. They would tell the same stories. Half the time I didn't go. It was that kind of thing.
Are you part of the whatever 50 billion Jews who can read Hebrew but have no fucking clue what it means?
At one point I could read a little Hebrew.
Yeah. I feel like that's how many people learn Hebrew. It's, they can read it for the bar mitzvah, but nobody can, there's no conversation. Nobody knows how to define anything. It's just, we can all read it.
Yeah. Actually, the one thing I remember as a young person was regarding my Jewishness, because I really had no awareness about being Jewish when I was young.
What do you mean by that exactly?
I mean, like it wasn't like something that was really brought up or discussed too much.
Okay.
Except with my grandfather, who kept saying, we've got to change your name. You can't go with the name Weinstein. You need to go with my name. His name was Cooper. You need to change your name to Cooper, not Weinstein. I couldn't believe that he wanted me to do it. It just seemed like such an outlandish
What was idea. His reasoning?
Well, he grew up in Philly.
Okay. Oh, wow. We're in Philly.
I don't remember exactly. When he was young, you know, he had a lot of incidences.
Gotcha.
Incidents where being a Jew was not, you know, he was harassed a lot. And that kind of thing. Another memory, like when I was like in right before high school, probably 12 or 13, we lived on the north side of Chicago, which was very nice.
Yeah.
And right off the lake. And I remember my mom driving by buildings owned by this one family. And she goes, well, we can't live here. We can't live here. We can't live here. We can't live here. And I said, Mom, why can't we live? And they go, they don't let Jews live in any of these buildings.
If anyway, how is Judaism played in your life, whether it's how you live or certain ideals. How do you feel? How do you define yourself or not as a Jew? How are your feelings on?
I think my goal is just to be a really good person, a decent person. I mean, I know I'm Jewish, but I feel like that's the most important thing. You know,
yeah, oh, definitely.
Accepting. I don't know if I'm completely answering your question, but like I said, I've never really been very religious. So yeah, I'm definitely a secular Jew.
Yeah.
And I feel very strongly about being Jewish and being proud.
Has your work in any way reflected the ideals you were taught as a Jew in terms of being a good person that you can relate to or mention?
You know, I mean, maybe doing service, just doing service. Yeah.
Have you done service through your photography or just in general?
I mean, I guess just in generally, the way I approach everything is just doing service. It helps a lot. It helps. It even helps when I get through rough assignments. I said, well, I'm helping somebody out or, you know, this is for the general good.
I know you. I mean, we're going to talk more about your rock and roll photography, but would you identify yourself as documentary or street photographer in any way? Have you done that stuff as well?
Yeah. I actually have a lot of stuff that I didn't get to show you that I just absolutely love when I first started out.
Nice.
Because I used to go on the streets and I used to shoot. Some of them are very moving, beautiful photographs.
What did you, just out of curiosity, what did you shoot with?
I shot with a Nikon, you know, all 35. But I loved going to events. So I have a whole series of wonderful event photographs. When I went to Michigan, I would go to the farmer's market, or in Chicago, I'd go to Maxwell Street, or, you know, all that stuff.
It seems to me, in terms of like photographers, that, you know, we play a role, we help people be seen, and we kind of bear witness.
Mm-hmm.
How have you done that, if I can ask?
You know, it was really interesting when you and I talked earlier before today, we talked about Slim Aarons and his photography. And, you know, he was a town and country photographer. He would go and shoot these very beautiful photographs, I'm sure, of a life that he wasn't really, that he didn't have entree to. That's why I sort of felt like that really hit a note for me, because I feel like what photography does is it facilitates me to enter worlds that I wouldn't normally be able to enter. Like homes, you know, with my real estate or rock and roll shows. I mean, all that kind of stuff.
Are there any particular stories? What was one of the, I don't know if you want to say craziest, I'm just curious on what one of those worlds were that you were in that you're like, how did I get here?
Wow. Well, I mean, with the real estate, I'm in these homes, these incredible homes of these very wealthy people that there's no way I would have on.
Right.
If I wasn't a real estate photographer. I mean, I feel very privileged that way when I'm photographing.
Okay, for me. I can imagine. Yeah. We're kind of getting more. I know you've done work for years and years. And I know mostly you've done more real estate stuff, but you know, you started off, the stuff you want to talk about today is more around rock and roll photography. Okay. I'm just curious on like the path from you being a music fan or a photographer. I don't know. And I also don't know when you started doing photography, whether you were younger, but I want to kind of paint a picture from like that to starting off at Ross Ellert.
So to roll way back, you know, I got my first camera in high school. It was a Pentax.
K1000?
I don't, it's just like a Pentax.
I love that fucking camera. I'm sorry. That camera is one of my, anyway, go on, but yeah. Okay, Pentax. Good.
You know, I didn't 100% embrace it right away. I had it. And then I took a couple classes at this place called the Darkroom.
Okay.
I had a great teacher named Jean-Claude Lejeune. He helped me out a lot taking a basic photo class. And the darkroom was owned by this guy named Joe Rowley, who was incredibly generous about what he knew. So we took the class, and then I went to college with the skills that I had, the little skills that I had. I worked for the yearbook.
Oh, nice.
And then I would photograph events. I'd photograph different people who worked at the university. It gave me a real people who came, like Dennis Hopper, Tom Wolfe, Allen Ginsberg. I would shoot them on stage, Sam Fuller, the director.
Oh, nice.
Werner Herzog. So
I have Werner Herzog on my arm.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Oh, sorry. Wow, you do.
I like Werner Herzog, but go on.
Yeah.
Keep going. Sorry about that.
Yeah. So anyway, I haven't even gotten to those photographs. I haven't scanned those yet. Dennis Hopper, yeah, but not any of those other guys.
One, the Dennis Hopper photo you took is amazing. I fucking love that photo.
Thank you. I love that photo too. Yeah, I mean the other photos of him like giving a lecture are not nearly as interesting.
Well, right.
I did have a lot of, I don't know how I did it, but you know, to stop him walking across campus and ask him if I could take a few pictures.
Yeah.
And I didn't know he was a very talented photographer at the time.
I keep meaning to buy his books because there's some documentary I watched about him, and he did some really good work. I think he shot mainly in Polaroids, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't remember exactly. I don't know if I saw Polaroids, but he must have given me the time of day, given
Yeah.
that, you know, he knows what he knows. And so that was a great experience doing that. And then in the summers in college, I would go and I'd work at the darkroom, and I
Okay.
was like an employee of the darkroom, and I'd go
Can
there.
the dark room was more of like a, or you know, help people develop. It was more of a club, I would say, right? I mean, it would
Yeah.
function more.
The darkroom was just an incredibly special place. Like I said, people like Jean-Claude Lejeune, who taught, and Joe Rowley was amazing. Joe Rowley, significant person at the time. Joanne Carney, very talented photographer.
Okay.
But then they had all these other people that would come in and print.
Nice.
So this guy named Mark Hauser, who was
Okay.
just really a brilliant photographer. Nathan Lerner, you know, part of that whole IIT group.
What's the
Harry
IT
Callahan.
group?
I think like Harry Callahan. I'm trying to think of the other people. Offhand, I don't
Okay.
know. But a very, very talented photographer
Nice.
who actually, you might enjoy this because I know, Rich, you like going off a path. So he owned the homes, the
Okay.
home that Henry Darger lived in.
Oh wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So when Henry Darger passed, he had all the artwork
Oh wow.
in his
That's got to
parents'
be.
home.
Did he, let me ask you a question. Did he know that existed before that, or he just found it?
I'm not exact. I don't know. I don't know exactly what the details were, but
It's
I
got
know Henry Darger did nothing with the work. I think most all of it.
right. And this, I don't know. I think about like, you know, in the context of like a landlord, and you just, you know, someone dies and you find this stuff, and I don't know. I can't imagine what it would be like to ever walk into a room and find the amount of work
Yeah,
that you didn't even know existed.
must have been amazing.
That's
Yeah,
interesting.
yeah.
It's funny. You know, we started on the podcast, you know, whatever, a year and a half ago, and it didn't really occur to me that it was more based on outsiders until like about 3 or 4 months in. And then somebody at one point told me, like, you're talking to photographers, that we're the ultimate outsiders. And
Right, right.
I really like that as a concept, because we're, you know, we are always like on the outside looking in, not, you know, part of it, but not part of it.
I had a friend, and my friend's nanny was Vivian Meyer.
Oh, wow. Okay. Holy
Yeah.
shit.
Yeah. So I was at all of his birthday parties. I mean, I don't know if I ever was photographed by her at the birthday parties, but she was his nanny.
What is it about Vivian Meyer's work that you like, that you might like or not? Like, what is it about her that interests you as a story?
I mean, so many things, but just that she would take these amazing photographs,
Yeah.
obviously when she wasn't working, and
Right.
go all over, and it was just like a compulsion, it feels like.
Yeah.
And the work was beautiful, just beautiful. Like the
I
people she photographed, the things she photographed.
yeah.
Yeah. With very, very clear vision. Right. I mean, I'm very moved by people who have that purity of
Yeah.
purpose. Like me, you know, I had to make a living, so I got sidetracked doing a lot of commercial work.
Of course.
I couldn't just do whatever I wanted. But when you think of the great photographers, I mean, I'm sure Diane Arbus did some commercial things, but her,
She's pretty wealthy. Who knows?
yeah, her vision
She
seemed
did do
very
some,
pure.
she did do, I think she did a bunch of work for Vogue. There's a book, I think, of all her like Vogue work, if I'm not mistaken,
Oh
but I could be
well,
wrong.
okay. Yeah, I mean, when I went to see the Edward Hopper exhibit, I was so surprised by how much commercial work he did.
Yeah.
But anyway, if you can keep that pure vision, I mean, that's really.
I'm sure you've done, I mean, I'm sure you've, I can assume you've also always taken photos outside of your work, correct? I mean,
Yeah, there's been periods where less so, though, especially like when my kids were growing up, you know, I was busy with them.
yeah. How many kids do you have?
I have two kids.
Nice.
Ben and Emily.
What are they getting to? What are they about?
So Ben is in he's in finance.
Okay.
And Emily's very much like me. She's into video and video production.
Interesting.
Yeah, she's very similar.
That's really cool.
It's the way she doesn't stop working and her focus. She's got a lot of very strong focus.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get back into you're working for the Ross Ellert printing. You're involved with the darkroom. You're shooting a lot of live bands in Chicago, and we're talking about between like what's the year span in there in terms of you shooting?
I mean, mostly live music. Like 77 to 81.
Okay, so I guess the question I have is: were you already going to shows a lot? Were you taking your camera? I don't know what I feel like. I can't imagine. You know, back in the I don't know what the rules would have been in the '70s if had you walked in with a camera to an actual show, if they would have let you shoot or not.
Right. So what happened is at the darkroom, in the basement, there was a photographic agency called Photo Reserve.
Okay.
And it was owned by this guy, Paul Natkin.
Okay.
And Bill Sosin. You know, they would go to all the events, but they couldn't cover everything.
And what was the purpose of the place? Like, what was the function of the
shooting all the musical shows that are going on in Chicago's.
Would they find other people to write the articles, or were they just sending it to news? Like, what were they doing? You know what I'm saying? I'm curious on what the function was.
Yeah, everything was shot on spec.
Okay,
so you
gotcha.
Go to these shows, you don't know if anyone's ever going to want them. But maybe Rolling Stone is interested in, like, the Police, like my Police photo that ran in Rolling Stone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they bought it. They bought it through the agency. Then there were all the Chicago Reader was a big, they ran a lot of music photos.
Okay.
Like a weekly newspaper, Chicago Magazine, and a lot of national magazines would come to Photo Reserve. Do you have a picture of this person? Do you have a picture of that person? If they had an archive and people needed photos, they would sell the photos.
Would you pick and choose where you went, or would they send you to just cover all the shows?
Well, they were the priority. They always did the Rolling Stones and Queen, you know, they did the big shows. Yeah. I didn't mind. I liked going to the smaller venues. I mean, to me, that was more interesting.
Yeah.
So I had no problem. So I liked being at clubs where I was around people or near people or where I knew the guy at the door and I knew the security guards. And So that was fun for me.
I'm just curious overall, kind of what you had to do to manage the social world of that to get good work. Like, how are you getting? I mean, the stuff you sent me is amazing, and you definitely have a certain skill.
Yeah, the people part of it was more exciting to me than, well, I should say more exciting than the show because there were obviously amazing shows.
Yeah, but the background. You're saying that you mean the background, like everybody around it.
Yeah, fans, the Ramones fans at these shows.
Oh, man.
Were amazing. The Funkadelics. I don't know if I sent you the crowd shot at the Funkadelics, but it's a shot.
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's a shot that I absolutely love. Or the crowd shot for Gloria Gaynor before Chicago.
No.
I mean, just incredible moment.
What is it about the crowd that you wanted to get that, shot? What is it about the details and for you in covering it? If I can ask.
Just so that you really get a sense of what was going on back then.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like there's a photograph I did of Eddie Clearwater, a blues guy, at Chicago Fest. The crowd is going absolutely crazy.
Okay.
So you get this feeling like, wow, I wish I could have been there. It was so electric. And I don't know if you always get to feel that in a lot of the show's photos. But then also when I'm shooting the artist, the musician, I liked cleaner photos.
Okay.
My Grace Jones stuff looks like it was done in a studio.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all against black pretty much.
The one in the silhouette you shot?
Yeah, there's one where she looks very snake-like.
Yeah, she's...
One with boxing gloves.
Nice. Did you get to interact with her at all by any chance? I'm curious on, I mean, what is your approach to getting a good portrait? What is your process?
So, you know, I really started out as a portrait photographer. That was my first love. And as I had mentioned to you earlier, I loved Arnold Newman. I loved Diana.
Okay. Can you give a little background on Arnold Newman just because I don't know who he is.
Yeah. Arnold Newman, photographed a lot of dignitaries, a lot of artists.
Nice.
He did the famous Stravinsky picture of him leaning on the piano.
Okay.
but he photographed Picasso. He photographed a lot of very interesting people.
What was the quality of his photo or Dion that you picked up? What was the quality that you feel like inspired you from their work?
Yeah, well, Arnold Newman's is very formal. Like, okay. Everything was perfect. Diane Arbus, just emotionally, like the way that she cut through to get these incredible, just beautiful portraits of people.
When you're doing portraits, I guess I'm curious in your process. Are you directing more? Are you letting people come to you? What is your process? And
Yeah. So when I would be on assignment, or I think I mentioned I photographed the whole Steppenwolf group at the very beginning.
Nice.
So it was all studio. I had everything lit. I direct them. And when I would be on assignment, photographing like a Leo Castelli or Bruno Bettelheim or somebody like that, I'd be very careful about how I set up everything, what their body language was.
Gotcha.
To create a really beautiful photograph.
Okay.
Yeah.
How much, this is the helpful thing about doing this stuff as well, not at the same level. How much are when you're at a show, how much of there is you as a participant, and how much of there is you with a job? Like, is it coming and out? Like, I'm wondering how much of you is just you experiencing and enjoying it, or is that harder to do because you've got a job and you've got to focus, or is it a little bit of both?
Literally, you have to focus. So, like, when I would shoot the shows, as I got more accomplished, I would use longer lenses. And back then we didn't have 3,200 ISOs. We had a 400 Tri-X that you rated for 20, and then you'd push two stops, that kind of thing. And then Ilford came. Yeah. And then you could push Ilford a little more than Tri-X.
Okay.
But there was a lot of technical things to it. Like, I can't tell you how many great photos that I took that are out of focus, that kind of thing. So, or the stage lighting wasn't very sophisticated. So they were in like very low dim blue light the whole
time. Yeah.
And you're sitting there going, I want to get the shot. I've got it. I signed up. But, you knew it would be a blur, whatever. So I think when you're shooting, obviously you're shooting, you want to get the subject, whatever it is you're photographing, to look great. But also you're fiddling around with manual focus. And you're shooting wide open,
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I first started shooting, I was doing a lot of live shows, and I couldn't afford real lenses, and I couldn't use a flash. So I had like a 1.6 and a 1.8 manual lens on a digital camera, and I'd come back with 70% blurry.
Yeah. Yeah.
You couldn't get one band member, more than one person at a time.
Right. Right. Yeah. I haven't shot a show in a really long time.
Okay.
I'd be really curious to shoot a show now that's well lit, like the way they are, with an automatic focus.
Yeah.
And pump up the ISO and not have to worry about whether the film's going to look okay. I can just
look at
the camera. I mean, it's a whole different game now.
I'm not even sure if I'm wondering if, as going through the archive, if that's triggering some stories or experiences.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. My tendency would be to want to go from 5 to 4 to 3 to 2 to 1, give you my best moments.
But we just got to keep it to 2 or 3 minutes each if we do that.
Yeah. But I'll start with
just to share a few. Great.
Number one is, would be the Ella Fitzgerald photograph, which I think is,
it's a nice photo.
Yeah, the most iconic photo I have. I'm very biased toward it because I was on assignment for Esquire magazine.
Okay.
And she was doing a press junket for Continental Airlines.
Okay.
And they literally flew from Chicago to Denver. And I was asked by Esquire to be there along with, I don't know who else was there, but there was videographer, there was couple other press people, and then Ella brought her band. So we're literally in the airplane flying, and I'm taking photographs of Ella and her band playing.
That photo you sent me is in a plane?
It's in a plane.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I thought it was like in a small church or something.
No, no. And Leroy Neiman was also on the plane because he did the poster art for Continental.
This, I'm looking at this photo now, and it feels like a Gary Winograd shot. Do you know Gary's work?
I do, yeah. Thank you.
Like you caught this moment that looks posed, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And I think those are some of the, to me, those are the interesting photos. When you can, you said before, like, you know, it looks like you, the shots you got of Grace Jones looks like they were shot in the studio. And my thing as well, if I'm shooting, it's doing documentary style and making it look like you spent $10,000 to get that shot. And there's something about this that falls in that category for me.
Yeah. Very nerve wracking because you're on the plane and you've got a flash and you're bouncing it.
Oh my God.
You're hoping that the film comes out. But
what part of the plane is this? It's like a special area for, like,
you know, I don't remember. I think I don't remember exactly where it was.
There's a reporter. The guy holding the bass looks like he's just really confused. Uh-huh. Her expression I don't know what that expression is. It's like prayer or something. This is awesome. But go on. So
yeah.
And this is just one more thing. Like, so in terms of like you working for the company, when did you start getting your own assignments, if I can ask, while we're on the subject?
So after a couple of years, I would go to New York all the time. Every 6 months I would go, and I would go to all the different magazines and show my portraits.
Okay.
And then along with my portraits, I would show the rock and roll stuff. So people would hire me to do both.
Nice.
Sometimes, yeah, portraits, sometimes the rock and roll.
Is there anything in terms of what you learn, what you do that kind of works for both?
Yeah, I mean, in a situation like Ella, I have no control over anything.
Right.
Other than to try to get my spot, the best place for me to be.
Yeah.
Which, you know, these guys are, I mean, I was not your typical press guy. I was dealing with some pros.
Well, it's also kind of odd because if you look at the other photographers, one is pointing to you.
Yeah, yeah.
So you must have been in a weird, and the other guy is pointing like to your left, but I don't even know what he's looking at.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting photo.
Yeah. So I love that photo. But what was really interesting is I think they wanted a vertical for the article.
And okay.
So I shot all verticals throughout most of the shoot, and the shots were really pretty horrible. I didn't think they were very good. And then at the very end, I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to turn my camera around and get a horizontal. And that's what was in front of me. And I was like, wow, that's amazing.
Nice.
And I took those photos.
I'd love to see that one at some point if it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think probably the Ramones was a really amazing. Well, I think they were in a bigger, I have it all written down. I don't have it in front of me.
That's okay. But
I think they were in a bigger venue.
And this is, okay.
Yeah. I think they were at the Argonne Ballroom in Chicago.
Nice.
Which was a bigger venue. But the fans were just rabid. And the show was amazing. I mean, they gave an amazing performance. And I was lucky. I was in the front. And again, dealing with the elements. Like, there wasn't great lighting. So I'd have to figure out, am I going to use a flash? What am I going to do here? I didn't like a flash.
What were the rules back then? Because I've only done, like, one. I've been trying to do more of this stuff. I've only done one, like, official bigger show, and it was, like, apparently now it's three songs, no flash.
Right.
Were there any structures and rules when you had nothing?
No,
okay.
Nothing. Yeah. No, I was really lucky. Yeah. I mean, as time went on, I think things changed. And also, I was shooting the smaller show, so all those guys wanted me there. It wasn't like there was social media back then.
Right. So you were.
They see a camera and they go, "That's the guy I'm going to play to." So I have lots of shows where literally people, Lonnie Brooks, you know, the blues guy, he's looking directly at me, or guys from the Romantics, you know, from Detroit, or, you know, and they're just totally playing to me.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Which was nice. I mean, we talked about how the camera gives you entree, but then The artists themselves were very open to my being there.
Tell me about that. Tell me about that in terms of your experience in photography, what it takes to make connections to get honest and real work.
Wow. I mean, you grind. You just keep grinding and do the best job you can. And the minute you have nice, new, beautiful images, get them out, show them to people. So like very early on with the rock and roll stuff.
Yeah.
The most exciting thing was after the show, everyone would go to clubs and bars. Nice. And there were certain clubs and bars that you'd go to. And I would go afterwards because I knew that they were all going to be there and they were wonderful to photograph. And after a while, they all got to know me,
yeah.
You know, and they, you know, they were very open to having me photograph them.
Nice.
You know, and I mean, it's funny. I'm not a really aggressive, assertive kind of person in that situation.
Right.
So I would just kind of hang out and I'd ask them, do you mind me taking your photo or whatever? And people were generally very open to it.
Interesting.
So I felt like I built trust with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at the shows too, because I knew all the security guys. They knew that I wasn't going to upset any of the artists if I went backstage.
There's an intimacy to your work. And I'm also curious if you can speak on those moments, like intimate moments with people.
Yeah.
Even if it's for a few seconds, I'm just curious on how you operate within that.
You know, it's funny. A lot of times I didn't really want to talk to them first because then I felt like it was more important. I mean, like in a situation where I'd go backstage.
Yeah.
Like I felt like if I talked to them, that it would temper the photograph in a different way. And I didn't want to do that. I didn't
Tell me more about that if you can. What do you mean by temper?
I mean, I felt like I wanted it to be, I don't know how to describe it. I felt like if I asked them in a nice way, if I could take their photograph,
yeah.
Most of the time, everyone said, yes, yeah, please go ahead. And then I felt like they had license to kind of be free, be whatever they want to be.
Gotcha.
But then if you have a conversation with them, it might, I don't know, it might hold them back or restrict them a little bit. And I didn't feel like I wanted in those kind of situations, I didn't want to do that. Obviously, when I was doing formal portraits, I'd want to talk to them a lot before we shot. But when you have to be kind of quick and out of there, I felt like it was more important for me to try to get the shot first. Yeah.
Were there any relationships you had with anybody you shot, whether it's, you know, an actor or musician or just anybody that you feel like your friendship, your connection made the work better over a period of time? Is that how you?
Well, you know, it's interesting just going back to like my favorite stories, like, you know, you were asking me about my top five.
Yeah.
There was a band in Chicago called Off Broadway.
Okay.
And they had the same manager as Cheap Trick.
Okay.
And Off Broadway was an unbelievably great band.
What did they play? I'm a Broadway person. I'm like, what would a band who is named Off Broadway perform?
I mean, they played very poppy kind of music.
Okay.
A little bit like Squeeze and
okay.
They were a little more rock and roll.
And this is what, give me the context of the time frame here. Is it 80s?
78.
Okay.
And they had a guy named Cliff Johnson who was in the band who was quite the performer.
Nice.
And really loose and very relaxed. And he played at this venue up in Evanston. I can't remember the name right now. But, you know, which was outside of the city and or north of the city, on the north outskirts of the city. And I would go there after shows. And they had a great fan base.
Okay.
And he was like, I must have shot the band 30 times.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I just thought they were great. And, you know, they never got the acclaim I felt like they deserved. Yeah. And there were all sorts of guys. There was a guy named Desmond, who is a punk rock guy, and he was an amazing performer. And I photographed him in the band a lot. And he gave me great access, and I think I got great photographs.
in your memory, what were some of the shows you got to shoot where just the performance of either the band or the lead singer, like, just like transcended? Any particular artist that you feel like did that for you?
Rick James.
Your Rick James photo from the back is fucking amazing.
I'm really glad you love that photo.
I love that photo.
But I have so many photos from that show of Rick James. Right. It'll if I ever do a book, it'll be a great back photo.
Oh, it's such a good. Go on.
Yeah, but Rick James is absolutely an amazing performer.
Nice,
and he played to the camera too. I was up there in front. There was a photo where he put the mic between his legs. I don't know if you saw that.
I don't think I had that one. I want to see all these at some point. But
and then he looked at me, which is very funny. So he's got this mic coming out of his crotch. But yeah, he was an amazing performer. And then I would say Devo.
Devo
was unbelievable because it was everything. It was
okay.
And Parliament Funkadelics, that was an amazing show. And that was at the Auditorium, which was a big venue.
And at that time, like, I know they did a lot of theatrical. Were they all in the space stuff and theatrics? Was that part of it for them?
Yeah, very theatrical. Yeah.
Was there any, while we're on the topic, was there any, like, what was the craziest or most, I don't know, what was one of the shows, like, in terms of sets or whatever, what was one of the most outlandish ones you've seen over the years?
I mean, the Devo was so well thought out. And
so talk about that if you can. What were they?
They did things, they backlit things.
Okay.
Sidelit things. They went very dark with, like, one little spot.
Nice.
You know, the lighting was amazing. And then they would dress in different costumes.
Right.
I think his name was Bougie Boy would come out in a big fat costume. And
okay.
Bizarre, very macabre kind of person. And he would sing. But it was like watching live theater.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, you know, they didn't, like the venues that I was at,
yeah,
because I didn't do like the Stones and that kind of thing.
You're mostly it's smaller. Like when you say smaller venues, you're talking about 1,000 seats, 2,000, or you're talking about 300?
Like 1,000, 2,000.
Okay,
I remember watching Talking Heads and just thinking they were absolutely amazing. I loved listening to them.
Yeah,
for the first time, I fell in love with their music.
I
love their music. You know, and it was just all about the music.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and Elvis Costello, same thing. Just very simple, but he was extraordinary to watch.
I mean, at this point, were you just a huge music fan? Was this just like a dream come true to get to go to these shows and be there? Was it part of the attraction for to just be in the world?
You know, it wasn't necessarily because I was a big music fan. I feel like I kind of fell into it. Like okay. I had this opportunity from Bill and Paul. Hey, Michael, if you want to shoot this,
you
know, and very eagerly, I was like, wow, I get to go to this show and I get to shoot this show. And, you know, and then it was, you know, it was all sorts of things. It was technical. It was seeing the same people all the time. It felt familiar. It was.
Yeah.
And then I got the chance to see these amazing people perform.
Did seeing all these bands perform make you a bigger music fan?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, watching them perform definitely was exciting to me.
What were some of the bands you feel like you know, after seeing them over the years, you started to kind of dig more into their stuff and, you know, they became more favorites of yours?
Well, certainly Talking Heads. I mean, I still love Talking Heads. I still love Elvis Costello.
I got to meet David Byrne in New York last time I was there randomly.
Oh, really?
It's very weird. But go on. Elvis Costello. Okay. Yeah. He's amazing.
Yeah. Now that I listen to more, I'm kind of surprised that I'm not coming up with anyone off the top of my head. Yeah.
Some of the moments that were memorable of bands and musicians don't nobody would even know who they were.
Right. So Off Broadway, you know, was the band for me, and Desmond. I love Desmond.
Desmond. And these were Chicago. And then these are, I guess I also wanted to clarify, I want to keep this in the Chicago world, if that's okay.
Yeah, they were kind of in the Chicago area.
Okay.
And then there were a lot of small bands, and they would break up and they'd get back together. BB Spin was a band. I'm trying to think. Then there are people, and maybe you'll understand this. I loved Joe Jackson. I think he's amazing, but I never hear anything about him anymore. I don't hear his music that much. I don't hear, and I
He's
think
got a
he's.
few hits that keep on, but yeah, he didn't. He's not a one-hit wonder, but he's not known too well either.
He's not, he, I feel like he deserves a lot more attention. I photographed him before he was Mr. T, and he
Nice.
was a pretty tough guy, and he was very nice, and he let me do anything I wanted. But I thought, okay, this guy's the toughest, best bouncer. He's gone
He
through
looks
the,
tough as fuck.
he really looks tough. Yeah. And I think he probably was.
Yeah.
Several years later, I actually did another job for Us Magazine when he was Mr. T, and I photographed his family, which is
Oh,
really,
nice.
yeah. But yeah, this is before he broke out as a big star.
So I want to go through some of these photos that you sent me, and just talk about them. There's one, the party, I guess it's a party scene with Catherine O'Hara and Dave Thomas. Give me a picture of where you're at here. I want to know. You said you'd filmed the 25th anniversary, if I'm not
Yeah,
mistaken.
it was Second City's 25th
And
anniversary.
I guess it was like a show and then a party.
Yeah, the idea was that the performers who went would do a little performance. I don't think it was taken real seriously. They probably improvised,
Yeah.
but they got up on stage and they did a couple skits, and then afterwards they had a party.
And just curious, before we start this, being in Chicago and doing photography, had you had other experiences with some of the members of Second City, or not so
Yeah.
much?
So, beside this event, I did thousands of headshots of actors,
Oh, wow.
and so I did a lot of the Second City people. So
Nice.
I, yeah, like Tim Kazurinsky, who was such a great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bruce Jarko, Jim Belushi, bunch of those people.
Nice.
Yeah, that whole, the whole Second City. So I have a, my association, just so you know, is my dad was best friends with Bernie Salins,
Oh,
who
wow. I didn't know
was a
that.
part owner. Yeah. And so I was very close to Bernie. And actually, Bernie's wife, Jane, helped me buy my first camera, my
Wow. So
Pentax.
tell me about yeah, tell me about your, either your dad's relationship with him, or tell me about what that was like to know these people.
Yeah.
And if you could give a little bit of bio. I know Bernie was part of starting Second City. I don't know if he comes from theater. I don't I've heard his name a bunch and I know him, but I can't recall right now. But yeah, tell me just about that
Yeah.
experience.
Yeah. So Bernie, I know he was a close friend of my dad's, and Jane, his wife, was English. Was
Okay.
English? I'm not sure if she's still alive. Very charismatic woman. And they were very close friends of my dad and my stepmom. And so every time a new show opened, our family got to go to opening night.
Nice. Oh,
So for
wow.
years and years and years and years, I would go Second City and
Oh,
see the
wow.
opening night. Yeah. So I felt very privileged. That
Was
was
he,
like a
did he
really
come,
cool thing.
yeah, did Burn, did he come from performance, or did he just get into it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Just curious.
The one fact I know about Bernie is that he collected spoons, silver spoons. I knew very little about him. And then also, when my dad died, after my dad died very young at 45.
I'm sorry about
Yeah. And so when my dad died, I wanted to talk to Bernie about my dad because I thought, okay, he knows something that I don't know. And I don't know my dad very well. Maybe he can give me kind of a window into him. And he refused to do it. He refused to tell me about his thoughts about my dad because he said, I'm going to influence it. I'm going to influence the way you think about him and how you feel about him. And so I can't say anything to you about him. I'm
Huh.
not going to do it. And I was very, I think maybe still a little upset, like I still would have loved to have heard what he had to say. And they were, my dad owned a clothing business, and Jane and Bernie would buy clothes there.
Okay.
That's what I remember.
While we're on the subject of Second City, I want to point out that the picture, one of the pictures you you sent me is the one, it's John Belushi. It's another photo of someone else taking a picture of a camera pointing towards you,
yeah,
which just makes me laugh in consideration of what's going on there. But tell me about this photo of Jim Belushi.
I love that photo. So that was, they were playing at Chicago Fest, Belushi and Aykroyd, and they'd been there actually for hours because I have photographs of them before the show. And the photographer in the background is Paul from Photo Reserve. He was the guy that,
oh, okay,
that that's originally, Paul. Yeah, that's Paul.
Yeah. Is he documenting you taking a picture?
I think he's trying to get Belushi, but I think I got,
he's right in, he's directly in your, I mean, he's directly in wherever you're placing this. It's kind of directly in the eye line of you.
Right. Right.
Anyway. Yeah, what, and so where is he? Where is, what's, what is, do you know what's going on? Is this like, what is this, a fair? Like it's yeah, outside.
We're backstage at Chicago Fest, which was an okay fair, and they had a big screen. I mean, tens of thousands of people would come. To wow. The show.
Yeah. Is he doing Blues Brothers? Cause he's dressed like
yeah, Blues Brothers. Yeah. It was Blues Brothers.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. Did you ever get to interact with,
I mean, backstage, anyway with him? Backstage, I took pictures of Aykroyd and Belushi, but I kind of left them alone. I didn't get the vibe at all that Belushi wanted to talk to me. But yeah. Aykroyd, I got a really nice picture of Aykroyd back.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
He seems like a decent human being.
He was very nice. Yeah. And then I also took pictures of him dancing and warming up.
Oh, wow.
With a flash. And he was okay with that too.
That's nice.
Not very.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you're going through this. I'm glad we're talking, because I don't know if everybody's photographs from this time, because they happen to do rock and roll, would be interesting, but yours are.
Thanks.
So I'm glad you're unearthing it, because this is really, you've got a world in here, you know?
I the more I'm into it, the more I go, wow, this world is getting deeper. Yeah.
And I guess I want to ask, because I want to ask about, like, real quick about archiving and about going through, you know, about your archive. Because it seems like a lot of photographers, you don't tell me your age, but when they get to a certain point, start looking back, and they go through their archives, and it seems to replace the excitement of shooting in some ways. It's something about revisiting and going through it is almost like, for that person, it serves a purpose of discovering something new without shooting, which is interesting to me.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is a really, I mean, you're making a great point here, Rich. It's a very poignant time for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is it that made you kind of dig into this stuff? What is it that's made you want to unearth this, that's made you even look at it?
Well, I'll tell you, I had a storage unit.
Okay.
I had two storage units. Full of everything. Prints, negatives, yeah. Old cameras. Nice. And over the years, the last couple of years, I've been trying to get rid of stuff because it's expensive and I don't need everything. So, there was a real estate broker that I work with, and he would always say, so Michael, when are you going to bring out those rock and roll pictures? And I said, you know, eventually I'll do it. And he goes, you need to do it now. You need to get it.
So, right now.
Yeah. So anyway, he talks like that. So there was a townhouse on Perry Street in the West Village.
Okay.
Beautiful building. And he had the listing for it. You know, it was like a $20 million listing. And the whole first floor of the townhouse was a former theater.
Okay.
So the first floor was like 20 feet or 24 feet by 100 feet with 20-foot high ceilings, at least. Wow. And Rich, he said, his name's Richard. He said, Michael, I want you to do a show here.
Wow.
And if you do a show, I'll help you with it. My company will help you with it.
He paid you for production and everything? He paid you to...
He just paid for half of the food, the drink.
Okay.
The hanging up of the show.
Okay. That's interesting.
It was a great motivator. So
yeah.
So I actually printed up a show. It took me several months to do it. I think I had 24 images up at the
Okay.
show, a lot of my favorite images. And it was one night. It's a lot of
Okay.
money to spend for a one night show.
What did it cost you to put the show on, if I can ask?
I mean, probably $30,000 to $40,000.
Oh my fucking God. For
Yeah,
20.
because I was
That's
scanning
like
everything and
11,
printing everything.
$12,000 a photo.
It was crazy.
That's
It was crazy.
crazy.
Yeah, maybe 30,000. I mean, it was a lot of money.
Yeah,
It's a
it's
lot of money.
interesting, but yeah. Did you sell that work? Did you get to sell
I
some of that work?
sold. I sold. Yeah, I actually,
Nice.
I felt very fortunate. Judy McGrath was there from MTV. She was the CEO
Oh,
there, and she bought the Ella print,
nice.
and she bought the Tom Waits print.
Wow, I didn't know. Wow, how
Yeah,
was
and I
nice?
felt like if Judy McGrath likes the photographs, and
Yeah.
she's worked with every rock and roll photographer that's ever lived, she has access to everybody, and she bought two prints right off the wall.
Real quick, what was it like? What was it like shooting or interacting with Tom Waits in any way? What did you just do you remember? Like, I mean, you can imagine his show must have been insane at that
You know what? His show was insane. You're absolutely right. He's
time.
someone
I
I
mean,
should have
he's also
mentioned.
insane, but he's great. But he's, you know, I can imagine he's a character.
He's pure theater. I
Yeah.
mean, everything about him, every movement. I mean,
Yeah.
it all feels very calculated.
And for some reason, my brain puts New York Dolls with him. Did you ever get to shoot the dolls over the years? Or.
I didn't. I didn't.
Okay.
The closest thing was Iggy Pop. I shot Iggy
Yeah,
Pop.
tell me about that. Because
And
those
that
are
was
really
it.
good too.
Yeah, he was outrageous. I mean,
Oh,
he pulled his
God.
pants down during the show.
I've seen footage of him just throwing peanut butter at his fans.
Yeah,
I don't think he's worn a shirt for the last 45
he's
years.
still not wearing a shirt. It's really something.
You gotta love Iggy Pop. And I
Yes.
think that there's like. It's kind of sad. I don't know how you see this, but like when you look back at these bands and what they did, you don't, it doesn't exist anymore. That kind of support, that kind of process, you can't be an Iggy Pop these days, in my opinion. So
I
it's
think
just,
it'd
you
be
know,
harder. It'd be harder,
do you feel like
right?
your photography is art? Is it more, is it, I don't know. I feel like some people, I'm curious on how you see it. I don't know if you see it as more functional or as more art.
Well, can I just jump back a little
Yeah,
bit? Just
sure.
the commercialization of music. But my significant other and I, Annie, we watch The Voice,
Nice.
and the finals are going on this week.
Okay.
And we absolutely love it. We cry. These guys are so good.
Yeah.
The finalists for the show, they're absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And I know it's a commercial venue, and I know that, all that stuff, but these people are so insanely talented. And I know year after year that happens. They have all these
Yeah.
insanely talented. Where do they go? I mean, but anyway, so
Well,
I love.
that makes a good point, because it's like even if you win American Idol, because of how, long it's been, it doesn't necessarily mean anything
It
anymore.
doesn't mean anything, yeah.
I'm curious on your commercial work. I'm curious on, and I'm saying commercial when I wanted to define commercialize the photos you actually sold or gave to people, not so much the overall work you took.
It's really interesting because I go to Art Basel every year.
Nice.
And I see, what the galleries present, which is art, right?
Yeah.
And I go, would my rock and roll pictures ever sell in this venue? No. I feel like what I do is very commercial. A lot of the galleries would poo-poo what I do, even though I feel like there is a right place for the photographs, but maybe not at Art Basel.
I mean, just interject. All I can say to you is, in terms of that Grace Jones shot, in terms of Rick James, that is art to me. And it's art that's harder because you have to make it while something is moving that's not meant to be art. To me,
Right.
that's a certain. Anyway, I'm just
Yeah.
going to argue with you that I do think some of the work goes to the high point of art.
Yeah. There are certain images like the Tom Waits image and
Yeah.
Grace Jones and Rick James, and I mean, that I think would be absolutely stunning on any gallery
Yeah.
wall. I mean, I totally believe that. But somehow, the rock and roll stuff, I feel like it's put in a box like it's too commercial. It's not art. I would love to see my work on a serious gallery wall.
Yeah.
You know,
nice.
Like on a Howard Greenberg wall. Yeah. And the other part too is the people part. The work that you haven't seen up to yet. I mean, to me, that's all very personal. And, you know, I think that is more art than, you know, because it was just, I went out on my own. I wanted to take some photographs, and this is what I came up with. This is sort of my vision. So I hope, yeah.
I'm wondering if there's any photos in your thought process that are like either too intimate or just yours that you've kept to yourself that you might never share.
Well, I've been really good at for the last 40 years. I've been very good at.
I just mean more like photos in your world that you're like, it's too private or too personal or too intimate to share.
Yeah, I definitely have those photos. You know, I have to say, like, some of my most favorite intimate photos are photos that I took of friends at weddings.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I love, you know, when my friends were all getting married, I would shoot all their weddings. And the photos are really, really stunning, memorable kind of photos. But I keep those obviously to myself.
And if I can ask, even in this context, what are you, as much as you want to share, what are you emotionally going through in these moments of, are you feeling it? Or what's the emotional connection to this kind of intimacy or this kind of, you know, what are you going through emotionally for these things?
I think just mortality.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about my mortality and legacy and, you know, who's going to see them. And
well, what about just even just in terms of celebrating with somebody or the wedding, like, are there certain things that you've shot that are just hugely emotional?
Definitely.
Your memory?
Yeah, definitely. Like the kids' photos, my kids' photos when they were young. Absolutely.
How many photos of your kids do you think you've taken?
They had to stop me. They said, yeah, no more. They got very good at guarding me from taking their photos. But
how are you at having your photo taken?
Horrible. I mean, I wish I wasn't so guarded about having my photo, but you know, it's interesting, Rich, because people take pictures of me all the time when I'm doing the interiors and the architectural.
Okay.
They want to put on social media, Michael Weinstein's here taking photographs of this apartment.
Yeah.
You know, they're the worst photographs. They're the back of my head, they're the side of me. They're me bending over. And I just accept it. I they say, Michael, do you want a pic? I say, no, just go ahead. Whatever you want to use, use.
Yeah.
You know? But like a really serious, nice picture of me, I have very few of those.
Okay.
Very few. And certainly now, I mean, I haven't really, I'm older. Like I'm, you know, I'm not afraid, 67.
Yeah, and you're not that old.
Yeah. And I'm not what I was when I was in my 20s. And, you know, like I'm trying to accept who I am with grace.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I struggle a little bit with it.
We all do. I can't even tell you how many people I've talked to in this podcast who have made a lot of money, who have done their voice or their name is their face is how they made it. And they still don't like hearing themselves or seeing themselves. It's a commonality, I think, in a lot of artists.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like this. It's almost like this. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. Don't look at me.
Right.
Which
right.
I do think comes into this idea, this process of like why people don't like to have their photo taken in some sense.
Mm-hmm. Part of, you know, it's really interesting. When I love my rock and roll photographs and I do think they're special and I feel people respond to them. But that's one small part of who I am as a photographer. Like I've had so many different phases.
Tell me, let's talk about those real quick if we can. Tell me more about, let's get into your phases.
Yeah. I mean, so like, you know, when I was doing rock and roll, I was shooting for magazines. I was doing editorial. I was shooting parties. I mean, I did just a range of different things. And they all, I felt like, added to the soup, you know, like,
gotcha.
Like I went to a lot of fancy parties and I would shoot, that kind of thing. And then I started doing the actors' headshots, and then I got to be, excuse me, very successful with that. And then I did more and more portraits. And then the fashion people liked my portraits of children. And then I started doing children's fashion. And then I did fashion. And then
and
I
just
had
real quick, have you always made a living as a photographer? Has that
I've
been
always made a living as a
that's
amazing.
That's to me, I gotta be honest, that is amazing. Because that's right. Fucking that is very hard to do.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, my love for photography, it's definitely been a journey. I mean, it's not been an easy thing, but I love the process. I love it if I'm doing interiors, if I'm doing rock and roll, if I'm doing portraits. It's always been fun and challenging, and I've always really loved.
What
know,
do you things. What do you I want to dig into this a little bit. Mm-hmm. What do you love? What's the core of what you love in photography?
I mean, I try to, you know, I try to do whatever it is that I'm doing. I try to make it mine.
I gotcha.
You know? So if I'm doing a headshot of someone, I want to put my self into it. You know, my perspective, the way I see them, the way I want to photograph them. And you know, shooting an interior, you can just shoot an interior and get nice pictures.
Yeah.
But I feel like the reason why I've been so successful at it is because I have a real, I mean, I love doing it, and I have a certain perspective, and there's just certain ways I see things, and I try to keep, you know, I keep the bar really high.
Okay.
With everything I do. And I feel like that's why I've been able to do all these different things. But like with the fashion, you know, I kind of aged myself after a while, and all the people I work with got older and moved on.
Yeah.
And I've always had to adjust. So I feel, you know, I wish I was one of these people that just did one thing and did it really well for 40 years. But I don't think I could have made it as a photographer if I didn't do all these different.
Is there one of those phases that was more challenging, that was a little harder to get into, to learn?
You know, the fashion part was challenging because I thought I was really good, and I really thought I had a great vision, but I was doing jobs that had nothing to do with how I saw my fashion stuff. So right. I never really had the opportunity to shoot campaigns that I thought were fitting. Maybe I have a funny dysmorphia around, you know, my talent as a fashion photographer, but I really felt like I had a vision, and I felt like I could really produce beautiful, interesting work.
Nice.
But the reality of it, Rich, was that I was shooting catalogs, and I was knocking out 20 shots a day, and I had everything on autofocus, and, you know, I mean, everything was like this, and
yeah,
banging it out. And then that felt very empty to me, that experience.
Just say, tell me what you know, just, you know, as a pitch, what do you want to do with this work? What are you, where are you at with it now, with the archive, all that kind of stuff? What are your plans for your rock and roll stuff?
Yeah, so I'm really excited about the rock and roll stuff, and I'm still scanning new images every week. So I've got the scanning going, and I'm working on a book, which I'm very excited about. I think I might have mentioned to you, I took a class with Elizabeth Avedon.
Okay. And, Richard's and daughter then, or wife?
Richard's, I think it's daughter-in-law.
Daughter-in-law, okay.
I think. But anyway, she's an amazing designer.
Okay.
And she's been very encouraging about the book. So starting in February, I'm going to work with her for the next year, putting the book together, designing the book.
That's awesome. And this is mostly rock and roll stuff.
It's going to be all my rock and roll stuff. Only rock and roll stuff.
Okay.
For now. Great. Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah. And while that process is going, I'll work on the other stuff. But right now, I really want to, you know, get the rock and roll book, you know.
Do you imagine that when that book comes out, you would do some shows around it as well, or some appearances?
I would love to do shows. Yeah, I would really love to get the work out.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to officially thank you, and then we'll talk. This has been great chatting with you. It's weird. It's I feel like this is one of the conversations I embedded myself a little more, but I felt like it fit. I feel like it needed to work that way. I'm hoping I didn't, you know, take over or anything or take too much time. I think it worked better as a conversation. Hey, this is Richie Wexler. Just kind of talking about this project. This project is more than just. This podcast comes from Instagram, and Instagram and this podcast are so much more than just what people think. You know, I definitely post a lot of fun and campy stuff sometimes. It is our bread and butter, for better or worse. I try to really be as inclusive as I can and include all people identifying at various genders and all races and religion, and just kind of really try to be very inclusive of everyone in this project. And a big piece of that is education. I mean, this is, for me, this is kind of creating an archive and building. It's educational to me. We have a whole page on our website, Deep Dives, there's 50 of them, and it's just a bunch of resources on different topics that people can explore on their own. I am a teacher in my regular life and photographer. So I really feel like being a teacher, having to do things, you know, when you're teaching about Martin Luther King and Black History, I had to dig deeper for myself so I didn't bore myself and my students. I didn't want to talk about the same three people. And that kind of a process really made me search deeper to include all kinds of people and all kinds of situations and things that aren't always, you know, considered the everyday, the stereotypical way of presenting these things. If you want to support us, always happy to take donations. I don't get paid for any of this. We do have a Patreon, Vino's Archive. You can subscribe to our page itself on Instagram, or just spread the word. We don't really, it's hard to spread the word on the podcast. We have a nice size audience for the Instagram page, but it's a whole scam in terms of trying to promote anything using Instagram anymore without paying a good amount of money, which we don't always have. So we rely on word of mouth, and it's amazing. I mean, if you look at our podcast, we've talked to some amazing fucking people. Excuse my language there. It's been a dream that most of the people I've gotten to talk to. So anything you want to do to support or share, spread the word is really appreciated. And thank you.
Thought in different ways. Look around the world today. Richie, I love you.